Good evening. Good evening, everyone. It's so nice to see you all. My name's Deborah Margolis. I'm the librarian who works with our Muslim Studies program, and we're so happy to have you at our second Muslim Journeys Book Club meeting for this academic year. We are going to be having three more in the spring semester, so we really hope you'll enjoy tonight and want to come back for those. I think you will. Tonight we're going to have an opening lecture with Professor Jyotsna Singh. She's professor of English and also affiliated with our Muslim Studies program. And then we are going to have a discussion of the book, and that is going to be led by Jihan Abdullah Muhammad, who's a PhD student in our sociology department here. And some of you who are, I see some familiar faces from our Muslim Journeys from last year, and you might remember Jihan from that. She was one of our discussion leaders, and also last time at East Lansing Public Library. So anyways, so glad everybody is here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Professor Singh, so you know a little bit about her research interests, and then we'll get right into her lecture. So Professor Singh teaches and researches early modern literature and culture, colonial history, travel writing, post-colonial theory, early modern histories of Islam and gender and race studies, and exploring the intersections of these different fields. And that's a kind of a theme of, I'd say, our Muslim Studies program, is these intersections between different fields, different worlds that maybe aren't so separate at all. So Professor Singh's published work includes many articles and book chapters, but I'll just mention a few of them. One is called Colonial Narratives, Cultural Dialogues, The Discovery of India in the Language of Colonialism. And another one was a companion to the Global Renaissance, English Literature and Culture in the Era of Expansion, 1559 to 1660. And currently, her current work is on a book that draws on post-colonial theory, global exchange, and the early modern history of Islam and Christianity. So we will be looking for that when it's published. And she's received a number of really prestigious research fellowships, such as the one at the Folger Shakespeare Library. And I guess I will stop there because it could go on. But we're so happy to be here tonight learning with Professor Singh. Okay.
I'd like to thank all of you, and especially our students, to come out on a blustery day like this. And I would like to first assure, you know, some of our students and others, you know, if you haven't read, you know, the full book, that's fine. And I have to confess, I'm not going to give a sort of formal talk, you know. It's going to be a journey. Sort of my interest is in partly a personal journey, into Orhan Pamuk's writing and my personal visits to Istanbul. And I will share with you some holiday photographs. And first time I went to Istanbul, and I'm just going to this is the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul. I went to Istanbul in 2006, and I always believe that cities speak to you. Some cities speak to you and others don't. I want to hold this here. And so I went for a, let me see if I can not move it. Okay. We'll just put it here for now, then I can show you each slide. And so I went on a conference, but then I also managed to find an old friend of mine from graduate school who I met after many years, and so I spent 2 weeks, and he showed me around. And what I found, it was really amazing because you could see what Pamuk talks about, the old and the new, the tradition and modernity. And because I work in the 16th and 17th century, I was really interested in the Ottoman Empire. And what I felt when I, and I can show some of the images here. So this is the Grand Bazaar, which is sort of near, the center of the area is called Sultan Hamid, which is all the main mosques and here. This is the sort of center. And the main mosques and the Topkapi Palace, and this is one of the big mosques. And immediately it reminded me of the Muslim Islamic architecture in Delhi and Agra in India. And it made me realize that in the 16th and 17th century, Europe was looking, you know, to the east, but the Easterners were not really looking to Europe. They were looking at each other. So the Ottomans in Istanbul, the Mughals in Delhi and Agra, and the Safavids, the Persians in places like Shiraz and other cities, were looking and talking to each other. And it's only when I went to Istanbul, I got the sense of this huge Islamic world speaking to each other. So they had languages like Turkish, Persian, which is a very the court language of high culture. And they had Arabic, which was the language of the Quran, you know, the religious language. And so this was a very intra-cultural world between them. And so that's the first thing that you go to Ottoman, you go to Turkey. Also, Turkey is different from India and other because it was never colonized by Europeans. In fact, the Ottomans colonized large parts of Europe and what is now the Middle East. So you don't see any British architecture. You don't see any segments of the British, but when you go to Delhi, it's, you know, it's Mughals and British together. So it's a very distinct place. So this is the kind of center of the city. And as Orhan Pamuk talks in the memoir, the Bosphorus is the kind of lifeblood. It's the strait. It's not a river. It's not like the Hudson River or other rivers. It connects the Black Sea and the Sea of Marmara. So the big ships, as he talks about in the book, in the memoir, the big ships go through there. And it's quite amazing because when you stand on the side, you see ships from Iran and Russia, and you know, and I you know, in today's world, you wonder how much security they would need with all kinds of ships going, and so it's a very dynamic city. You get a sense of that, and you get a sense of East and West. You have all these minarets. You have a lot of old, villas and palaces. And you have, a sense of very dynamic. And this is, and this ferries run, they're the kind of lifeblood. And Istanbul is divided between Asia and Europe. So you're going back and forth to the two shores. And it's a wonderful sense of history, of dynamism, of, you know, moving across. And it was interesting, whenever I would meet Turkish people, they would always call me Hindistan, which is the kind of Muslim name for India. And they would see historical connections, you know, which is sort of modern Turkey, and they would see you as different. Now these are, the whole city is filled, I have a sort of personal kind of interest in architecture, and the whole city is filled with these wooden classic architecture that again he writes about. He spends a lot of time in the book, in the memoir, writing about the buildings. And I think many of them, some of them are in ruins, but I think many of them are repurposed. And there were some, you know, I took a lot of pictures of those. This is just, again, the same city center. This is a fortune teller. She looked like from India, some gypsy person, which I thought was kind of very exotic. And here, if you see, you again see the old and the new. The old, I think the word is yale, the old villas that he talks about in the memoir. And so they're really beautiful. Some are in disrepair, some are in better states. As you go around up and down, you get a sense of this historic past. This is a very small mosque in an area called Bebek, which used to be a very local place, but now it's become more trendy. And I think what is remarkable in Istanbul is that you do hear the azan. In the evening, you'll hear it. It's kind of a part of the city. And yet it seems, you know, cafes and I think drinking establishments and a kind of club. I mean, it's changed a lot, I think, under this government. But even I don't think it's, you know, the sense of the dynamism of the city is very much. So this was just a very small local mosque. This is, again, mentioned by Pamuk. This is Hisarlik. It was one of the old forts during the Ottoman time. And all of this is along the Bosphorus. You know, you can see this as you're going along. This is my friend who I found after 15 years from graduate school. We had lunch in this old hotel, which was a former prison of the empire, which is kind of interesting. And this is, again, just the shoreline. So this is one of these old, beautiful, classic wooden architecture moving from the 18th and 19th century. And it's amazing how much of the city has preserved that architecture. And some of them are in really good condition, and people are living there. And I think the book itself, if you look at the book, I think he's giving more pictures of the ruins. He was really interested in the ruins, and we'll come to that in a moment. And here again, this is the Arnavutkoy neighborhood, which is it's a very old neighborhood, but now it's kind of trendy. So you see these are very old houses, and some of them have been, renovated or made into different units or, just developed. And you get a great sense of a live city, and that's, I think, what he's talked about. And this is, I think, again, this is... we went to an island called Boyokuda, and this happened to be on the day of, I think, Atatürk's birthday. And one of the strands of the memoir is the difference between the Republic and Turkey when Turkey became a Republican after the Ottomans, and how Atatürk completely westernized. He changed the language, he changed the script, it turned into the Latin script. And it became this very heavily secular state in which I think he sort of repressed all forms of religion and so forth. But this was 2006. I'm wondering if they have too many celebrations of Atatürk now in this government, which is a more Islamic government. But you could see how much Turkish people, I think, even now have a sense of the nation and nationalism. They know Turkish. I don't know if anybody Turkish here. So my notions are very anecdotal. And again, it's just this constant, the center of, these spires. And what is also interesting about the architecture, the main mosques and the palace, the Topkapi, they are in the Muslim style, but they're a little more Europeanized. They're quite different from Muslim architecture in India. And there's more Romanesque, there's different kinds of Islamic architecture, if you look, and quite different from the Iran, from the Persian Safavid Empire. So there were different kinds of architectures that they were competing. And this is again. So I'll just kind of put aside these. And so my sense is that why I love this memoir is because he takes the city and he has this very dynamic sense of the city, but then he blends it into different historical views of the city. So he's looking at the views of European painters, he's looking at the view of European writers. And he talks here of the notion of the picturesque. The picturesque is a notion in Western 19th century, 18th century Western art, and how that transferred to Istanbul. And I think what he's showing is that any city, any culture doesn't have only one history, but has a really layered history coming from different sources. So I think I can come back to these pictures, but I can just... go to the novel and go to Orhan Pamuk and talk a little bit about him. I have a kind of sort of strange, uncanny, it's really not a personal history, but the first time I heard and saw Orhan Pamuk was, I think, in 1996. And I was out of graduate school and I had gone to a conference in New Zealand, and he had published his first novel called The White Castle. And he was this very shy, awkward author. And I had gone with a friend of mine, and my friend was introducing him. And that book, it had got kind of interesting mixed reviews, and I'll show you some images. This is a very interesting image. This is about astronomy and modern kind of discoveries with the Ottomans at the back. And then this is another image, and the story is actually very interesting. The story is of a young Italian scholar who was captured by Ottoman pirates, which is a historical fact. In the 16th and 17th centuries, there were a lot of piracies, and often boys were abducted and men were abducted, and they became a part of the Ottoman janissaries. The young boys were in the court. And he became a slave of a Turkish scholar. This is not a true story, but Pamuk presents it as if it's a history. He presents it as if somebody finds this document in a library. It's an amazing book. I would really recommend you read it. And then these, they are identical twins for some reason. They look alike. And they have this very interesting, very complex, I read it a while back, so I can't give you too many details, but they have this complex relationship. And each adapts and alters their own identity to the other one. And then what is interesting is at the end, one of them goes back to Europe, but you never know who goes back. And it remains a kind of mystery at the end. And so when he, and he gave this presentation, and he, everybody in the West used psychoanalysis of the self and other, and he got really irritated because he said, this is not a psychoanalysis, this is not a Freudian story. And you could see even then that he was this very charismatic, really kind of quirky, interesting author, I mean, an interesting person. Then it was kind of odd. I mean, I always feel it's uncanny. Then some years after that, I think this was in around early 2000s, I was at another writer's festival in Edinburgh, and he had just published this, My Name is Red. And he gave a long excerpt, an interview. And to me, these two novels, in a way, I think are most closely connected to Istanbul. If somebody is interested in exploring Pamuk, I would really say read these two and then read Istanbul. And I think you can get a sense of his interest in these cross-cultural interactions or within cultures, how ideas, how paintings, how images circulate within cultures. He has a very interesting and fluid and complicated sense of culture and identity. And I think he comes to it always kind of in odd, quirky ways. And this is an amazing, so here, this is the Turkish edition of it. And this is a very interesting story. Again, this is set in my period, in the Renaissance. It's set in the 16th century, mostly in Istanbul, but it's also set in these other courts. It's set partly, the painters travel to India and to Iran. So the Sultan commissions many acclaimed artists in the land to create a book celebrating the glories of his realm. Their task is to illuminate the work in a European style. So, you know, Pamuk himself, as the book shows, he first wanted to be a painter and then he became a writer. So he's very interested in sort of painterly representation. But because figurative art can be deemed an affront to Islam, 1 minute, sorry. Oops, here. This commission is a dangerous proposition. The ruling elite mustn't know the full nature of the project. And panic erupts when one of the chosen miniaturists disappears. So it's like a murder mystery. The only clue to the mystery or the crime lies in a half-finished illuminations themselves. And this is almost like a puzzle. This is part fantasy, part philosophical puzzle. And I got this description from a book, is a kaleidoscopic journey to the intersection of art, religion, love, sex, and power. And this is a fascinating book where he talks of the relationships between the different Muslim courts and how they competed with each other in creating these miniature paintings. Miniature painting was a very important contribution of Islam. I mean, India had the most amazing miniaturists, as did Turkey, as did Iran. You know, if you go to the British Library or Victoria Albert Museum, it's filled with these miniature paintings. And he explains, when he gave his talk, he said he did research for 10 years for this book. Because he understood the conflict with Islam was that you can't paint the human figure, but one way they got out of it was painting small figures as if God is looking on at them. So the perspective, in a lot of Mughal paintings that I've studied, the perspective is always sort of from outside, and you can see these figures, you can see, and they're amazing. And I think you can see the connections between these different Muslim empires. Often you would have painters or calligraphers who would move from the different courts, you know, so they could move from the Persian court or the Ottoman court or the Mughal court, you know, so they were around there. Another thing in the story, embedded in the story, is a biography of him and his brother and his mother. Now, those of you who have read the memoir, one of the things we learn about his philandering father, although the book is dedicated to his father. Those of you who haven't read, I mean, he writes about his family and how his father was constantly unfaithful to the mother and would disappear. And once the mother found, went to a house where the father had for the mistress and found a house that looked identical with the same clothes and the same tables. And so it's very much like My Name is Red, and he said my father had a double. My father actually had this other person who lived in this other house. So part of the story is about a widow or a woman, or a widow with two young sons, and I think they are named, one is named Orhan and Shep, they are named after himself. So these are the two novels I think I really like them the best, more than some of his later work, and they link very nicely to Istanbul. So I don't know if you have questions, or these are something that you would like to read. Let me come to Istanbul itself, and I hope that you will have a lot of questions. As I said, I bought this book from Istanbul in 2006. It was, I was there 2006 or 2007. And it was out, I think it was published in 2003 and translated, at least the one I have is translated in 2006. And there are these wonderful bookstores around the palace area, the main, where all the mosques. And then I should share this. I don't think anybody's in this room. Somebody borrowed the book and never returned it. So I'm always looking for, but then, somebody said, I was really glad that they borrowed it, because I think they would have got something out of it. So then I bought a new copy recently while I was traveling abroad. And the way I read books is I write on my books. So, after I'm gone, if anybody finds my books, there'll be lots of things written on them. And I think this is an amazing, I found this an amazing book. And as I said, I'll just kind of put this here, that what he does is there's a kind, it's almost like an archaeological structure. There are cultural excavations, there are personal emotional excavations, there are historical excavations, So it's, and his family, very bourgeois, upper class family who was sort of losing their fortune, very secular family. This was the family who were a part of this Ataturk's new republican ideal of secularism, westernization, looking to the West as the better place. And he I think treats his family with great irony and kind of humor. And I really related to this, because I think I relate to my Indian family something like that. They're sort of very bourgeois people there. The other thing he does is he examines the city more historically through Western and Turkish eyes. And so if you haven't read the book, or if you want to read it, I think an interesting way to follow the book is to look, where are the Turkish eyes and where are the, and there's a kind of mixture, because he himself is a mixture in that. And then the second part is, which is really interesting, is that he fills, as you know, I hope all of you have seen the book, and even if you haven't read it, it's filled with photographs of crumbling buildings. And the first time when I read it, you ask yourself, why is he so interested? He doesn't show many intact, like my holiday pictures doesn't have crumbling buildings. Now I wish they did. But he has all these crumbling buildings and fill the place, traditional wooden houses, villas. He writes about it. And so I think, is he offering a model of urban life that embraces the past as much as it looks to modernity? And I think reading the book the second time, I think he has a really important lesson for neoliberal development. I think neoliberal development means erase every sign of the past, build high-rise, build modern buildings, embrace modernity. And I think they've been having these struggles in Turkey, where they destroyed that Gezi Park and they wanted to build a mall. Everywhere they're building shopping malls. I know in India, I'm sure in other countries. And he's, I think, hearkening back. He's doing something which is counterintuitive and sort of going back in time. So I think the question you would ask is, why is he depicting these images? To me, the most important part of this book is this, his notion of huzun or melancholy. And I think this is the central conceptual sort of overarching idea that informs his journey of Istanbul. And I think this is an idea that as Westerners, or those of us located in the West, need to think about as having some value. So he says, huzun is a melancholy as defined by Arab and Turkish philosophers as a mystical state of desiring union with God and as a kind of illness. And very importantly, huzun is not the melancholy of an individual person. Western melancholy coming from, you know, Burton's Anatomy of Melancholy in the 17th century, sort of Renaissance writing and medieval writing is all about the individual, the humoral theories. And here, the melancholy that permeates the book beautifully, it's sort of emotionally and psychically fulfilling. It evokes the sadness of passing times, of nostalgia. And as he says, even the rich people embrace melancholy. The rich don't say, oh, well, you know, we're well off. So what is this state, the sense of melancholy that infuses the city? And I think, and you know, I'd love to hear from you, I think melancholy is... You can find it in, it, maybe it's something more Eastern, like I think in India, a lot of the films, the very old nostalgic films, have a large cultural melancholy that all Indians can relate to across classes. In fact, when he came to MSU, did anybody see him? He came about, did you meet him? Did you anybody hear him? He came to MSU just before he won the Nobel Prize. And he gave an amazing talk. And so that's the last time I sort of, I meet him every 6 years, I think, is some kind of, and I remember having a wonderful conversation with him about Indian films and how he liked Indian films and how, you know, the sense of emotion and nostalgia. And so he's saying that cities have this, and this is the kind of informing vision. And let me just move here. Oh, sorry. I'll just move on here. I'll just move on and come back. And so he says, he tries to see where connections can be made between huzun and something Western, and he looks at Levi-Strauss's book called The Tristes Tropiques. And he said there, in Levi-Strauss, you find a communal... the idea of a communal feeling of melancholy, an atmosphere, and a culture that is shared by millions. But he says they're not identical. In Istanbul, the remains of a glorious civilization, the Ottoman civilization, which was such a glorious, you know, for 600-700 years, are everywhere. But he says what happens in Western cities, you don't see remains of great empires. They are put into museums. He says they are preserved like museums of history and displayed proudly. Like I'm thinking of London, you know, where we took our students. You know, there's a lot of history, but all of it is kind of museum-fied. You know, it's become in a museum, it's put in. You don't see crumbling Tudor ruins anywhere. You know, everything is organized. And so here and I think he's making a really important point about urban development to kind of value ruins as ruins. And he says it is by seeing huzun, by paying our respects to its manifestations on the city streets and views and people that we at last come to sense it everywhere. And then he has this very interesting quote, and I picked up a couple of quotes. He said, we had no desire to live in Istanbul, nor in Paris or New York. Let them have their discos and dollars, their skyscrapers and transports. Let them have their radios. So he wants to kind of look inside, look inward in his heart. I mean, here he's even trying to sort of show Istanbul has become too modern. And then another very interesting quote he has here, he says, I think perhaps it is a generational thing. I talk to younger people and they say, where is the melancholy city you talk about? My Istanbul is a sunny place. And I think, again, that's the youthful culture of new liberalism. It's all about fun and joy. And certainly not, you know, you're not supposed to be unhappy, you know. I think that's a kind of anathema in our culture. And so he's sort of moving counterintuitively to that. And so I'm just going to kind of sort of end here a little bit and just sort of ask you with that sort of how does, in keeping with the series, is how does this memoir provide us with a Muslim journey? What do we learn about the Ottoman Empire? What are Turkish aspirations for modernity and westernization that Pamuk depicts? And I think to me the most important is this huzun. How does it operate at the intersection of the Islamic past and the westernization of Turkey. And here he says, Huzun is not a melancholy of a solitary person. It is central to Istanbul, to its language, culture, poetry, and everyday life. And I'll kind of leave with this wonderful, this is one of the book covers of The White Castle, you know, where you have the twins. So I think I'm going to stop here, and I hope that there are questions. I mean, I have stuff more to say, but I like to see some interaction, and I'll kind of leave it at this image that you can all look at. So I will end here, and I hope that we'll have a conversation.